It is good to be with you today. We hope that you're doing well. If you're our guest, we are glad that you are here. Today's message is actually the first part of a two-part message. And the second part could be, I think, maybe the most important part of the two parts. And I put this together not thinking initially about the fact that next Sunday is Mother's Day. And the second part to this, as you will see once we get into the first part, may not be the best fit for Mother's Day. We'll have to see. We'll figure it out. But it could be that you're not going to hear part two of this until late in May. Now, let me tell you why. I'm going to be leaving on, I believe it's May the 10th. I think that's the date. It's a Wednesday morning. I'll be leaving for what will end up being Utah to do a couple of presentations, Black Robe presentations, and then up into Idaho where I'll be speaking from one Sunday to the next Sunday. And then on my way back from Idaho, I'll be stopping on a Tuesday and doing a presentation in Grand Junction, Colorado. So saying all that to say this, I will be gone for 2 weeks. Paul will be preaching while I am... Did that slip out? I didn't mean for that to come out. Paul will be preaching while I'm gone, be teaching the class. So part two to this message, all of that to say this, part two to this message may have to be covered when I get back. So hopefully you can grab hold of what I'm going to be talking about today. And then when I do get a chance to do this second part, we can stick it back onto this. Okay? All right. Well, we're living in a day when I don't know about you, but I often feel kind of confused. I mean, does life around you seem confusing these days? I often feel stressed. Do you feel stressed? I do sometimes. You say, well, I thought you guys were Christians. I thought you guys were preachers. Let me assure you, preachers feel stress. Christians can battle depression. We can panic. I know that if we were perfect, we wouldn't, but since I'm the closest thing to perfect you're going to get out of the two of us, I just want you to know we do. We battle with all the same stuff you do. In fact, you're going to see in just a moment, be reminded of some things, maybe some things you didn't quite know. Some of the greatest people in our history, some of the greatest people in the Bible struggled with the world in which they were living. And when you look around you, man, my gosh, things are in... Well, we're in a tight spot, aren't we? I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. I'm constantly confronted by people either when I'm different places speaking, or even yesterday I'm in Arkansas helping to do my brother's wedding, and I was asked by an old friend, Dan, do you think that we're on the verge of something massive? I mean, do you just get that feeling? And I'm always very careful because I'm not a prophet. And I don't want to speak prophetically where God has not given me some kind of clear word that I just have a mandate from heaven to share. But I got to be honest with you and tell you, yeah, I do feel like we are building up to something. Now, I don't know if that something's going to be marvelous or if that something's going to be devastating. I have no idea. I mean, look at what has happened just in the last couple of weeks with Elon Musk and Twitter. Now, first of all, I'll warn us, be careful about hoping for more than you should with Elon Musk. You got to remember, he's not a conservative. But he does seem to be a patriot in that he believes in free speech. He seems to really get that. And so, actually, I have a lot of hope that he's going to bring some balance to some of this left progressive nonsense where they've just been censoring people who just had a different point of view, which, man, if he does that, that's going to be a breath of fresh air. Won't it be wonderful? Now, just think if I had said to you a month and a half ago that Twitter was going to be under new management who is promising to bring fairness and freedom of speech, would you have believed that just 5, 6, 8 weeks ago? But in 2 weeks, this is happening. Of course, the lefties are going, some of them are doing a double-fisted, and they're saying, well, they might very possibly silence certain politicians. Duh, you threw the President of the United States off. Now, I'm not for censoring other politicians, but isn't it funny how they're willing to be incredibly unconstitutional and ditch liberty as long as it doesn't affect them personally? When it starts to affect them personally, of course, then something's wrong with that. But just think of how quickly that turned. And I said all that just to say this. Guys, things could turn on a dime. God can flip things so fast. He can flip the script so fast that it'll make us all dizzy. Just remember when those Israelites were backed up and thought the Assyrians were just going to wipe them out and they were done for in one night, one angel took out 185,000 enemy soldiers. Those guys woke up at sunrise to a completely different world that they went to sleep on. Doesn't take God any time. So I don't know. I don't know what's coming, but I can tell you this. I do sense that we're on the edge of something. We're on the verge of something that is going to be history making to the good or to the bad. But in God's kingdom, of course, they're never having, you know, any kind of panic meetings, and God's never saying, wow, what do we do? And the Godhead never meets an emergency session trying to figure out another plan. Or, you know, one thing that you'll never hear God say is, wow, I didn't expect that. I mean, that's never going to happen. So in this world of stress, here we are as Christians trying to make sense out of what it is that God wants us to do and trying not to allow the current events to dictate the march of God's kingdom. And that, you know, that's really difficult, especially as a pastor. You know, it's very, very difficult to not say, my gosh, we can't do this right now because of what's going on in the world. Well, do you think this took God by surprise? Do you think God has said, okay, now hear this to everyone in his kingdom, time out on everything we're doing until we see what Elon Musk is able to do. And until, I mean, come on, God's kingdom moves forward, right? So we're kind of all stressed out. It's kind of like the man who was just under tremendous load of stress and depression, and he was having heart palpitations and all kinds of stuff, and he was just having a real problem. So he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, man, you've got problems. And so he said, if I could, I'd like to visit with your wife. And so he pushes the guy out of his office and brings his wife in. He says, now, ma'am, I want you to know, your husband's in trouble. I mean, he is under tremendous stress. It's gonna do something to his heart. Who in the world knows? I mean, this could kill him. And so here's what you're gonna have to do if you wanna help him. You're gonna have to just start being incredibly cooperative and just submissive. And in fact, when he comes home, you need to have his meal ready to go, his favorite foods. Make his favorite desserts. If he's a little stressed, why, give him a shoulder massage. And you know, while you're working on the meal, you got a little spare time, we'll go out and wax his car and maybe vacuum it. And you know, you might want to get ahead of him and mow the yard and do all these things. And maybe there'll be a chance that your husband can pull out of this. So she said, whew, that's a big order. So she walks out of the office. The husband said, what'd he say? What'd he say? And she said, honey, he said, you're going to die. So there you are. Stress. Stress can be a bad thing. Now, here's the deal. It can be bad for the Christian. You see, sometimes I think we unfairly place unreasonable expectations on us. I mean, how many times have you somebody say, well, I thought they were right with God. I thought they had faith. As if to say, because they're also human, they don't have faith. As if to say, they can't be right with God even though they're struggling with some illness. And remember, illnesses are not all in the liver. Illnesses are not all in the gallbladder. You know, people can have emotional problems. People can have mental, psychological problems. Now, a lot of times they have spiritual roots. They sometimes have physiological or vice versa. But to think that Christians have just always got it together. In fact, I have found in my life that sometimes finding the will of God is like finding your way in the fog. And so that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about what do we do in a world that is just in a mess. And we're battling with things that we didn't think we might battle with stress, maybe depression. Maybe you're battling with depression. And as a believer, you feel guilty. You don't even want to tell anybody because you feel like it's a some kind of judgment or litmus test on your faith. And so you just don't want to tell. So you just struggle in isolation. You struggle in silence. But you're dying on the inside. And you have questions that don't have answers. And maybe sometimes you kind of get angry at God. You know, you have these thoughts and you don't know what to do. Well, let me tell you something. Walking with God is not always an exact science. Now, God in His Word has made some things abundantly clear. There's a lot in God's Word that's black and white. God tells us what He hates. God tells us what He will not accept. God tells us what He will reject and judge. God also tells us what He expects, what He will bless. The Bible's abundantly clear on all those things. But then there are a lot of things that the Bible just doesn't spell out in black and white. In fact, the Bible doesn't give me, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. And if you do all these things, then everything works out just like this. Because it doesn't always work out that way. And it seems to work out differently in different people's lives. Have you ever thought, well, why is it, God, that I'm serving You like, oh, so-and-so, but things don't work out for me like it works out for them? Now, typically, we don't say, well, why is it, God, that I'm serving You and things are working out a little better in my life than it is? See, we don't normally point that direction. Just the things that we don't think we're getting a fair shot on, right? I mean, come on. We have to be honest with each other sometimes. And I've got to tell you that as a believer, and then on top of it, having been a pastor for the majority of my, in fact, I was full-time in the ministry at the age of 22. I was pastoring a church when I was 23, basically. Well, I'll be 63 in August. I've been pastoring full-time for 40 years. I preached my first sermon when I was 16. That's 47 years ago almost. So, you know, when you think about it, and I've been at it a long time, but I can tell you this, as a pastor, as a spiritual leader, I wish things were just crystal clear all the time, black and white, everything's just easy, I've got, you know, a word from Sinai, and I know exactly what God wants us to do. Guys, it doesn't work out that way. Or I can tell you this, it hasn't worked out that way for me. In fact, I have a lot of friends who have some different beliefs on certain scriptures and doctrines than I do, but they're still friends and they know the Lord. But some of those friends, they've always got a word from God. God told me this. God told me that. God said this. God said that. Man, I'm telling you, sometimes I don't hear God say anything. Paul's under conviction, so he left. I want you to know right now. Pray for him. Pray for him. It's like that little kid is messing up in church, and the daddy was carrying him out to let him have it. And as he was crying, screaming, begging him not to carry him out, he said, people, pray for me. Pray for me, people. That little kid was. But they have always got a word from God. God talks to them all the time. Guys, I have been serving the Lord seriously. I'm not perfect. But I've been serving the Lord seriously since I was a kid. And I think I could count on one hand the times that I think God has communicated to me in such a way that I knew without a shadow of a doubt exactly what God was saying to me. Now, I'm not saying that God can't or doesn't. All I'm telling you is that in my life, I don't get these kinds of messages. I don't get these burning bush experiences very often where I just know exactly what God said and that's the way it is and I'm going. I wish maybe I did. Maybe some of these other folks do get that all of the time. And yet I watch their lives, and their lives are no different than mine. They're just as frustrated and just as doubtful sometimes, and they seem to be somewhat in the fog as I am. And so I'm not so sure. And I'm not saying that these people are lying or that they have ill motives. I'm just saying that I don't get all of these clear words from God. Now, I know what the Word of God says, and I don't struggle with that much other than when it condemns me, and of course I have problems with that, but other than that, but I don't have these. And so I want to talk today about following God in the fog. Following in the fog, because you know what? Most of my Christian journey has kind of been in the fog. Now, I don't mean that I'm just clueless spiritually. I'm just walking around going, hey, I don't know. I'm always licking my finger, and that's how I find God's will. It's not that kind of thing. Oh, well, he must have prayed through. He's back. So anyway, I have followed the Lord in what kind of feels like a fog. Now, you know, let me compare the two. So, you know, a thunderstorm comes through and it's cloudy and it's dark, but there's lightning and there's thunder and there's wind and there's rain, but then it goes on through and then the sun shines. But when a heavy fog sets in, you don't know how long it's going to be here. And you almost, sometimes it's so thick you can almost cut it. And if you're traveling and you get caught in that kind of fog, but you've got to get to a destination, well, you can't stop. But at the same time, you can't see very far in front of you. And if it's at night, it's even worse. And you're really concerned about just running up on somebody. You couldn't see them. Maybe they have car trouble and they're stalled in the middle of the road and you couldn't see them. You ride up on them and it's too late to stop and you slam into them. I mean, we all know of stories where that's happened. And this fog just sets in. And you're just kind of inching your way along because you can't see as clearly as you want to see. Well, ultimately, I believe that there's a way to follow God in the fog. We live in a day of a lot of fog, so I want to talk about it. But I also want to get to the second half of this, which is the depression that often comes in, and we have to deal with it, and the stress. And what does God say about all that? And we'll get to that. So, let's begin by talking about the path that God has for you, the path that God has for me, the path that God has for this congregation. Because I would love to tell you that in all of my life, I've just gotten these clear directions. As I said, I've always known exactly where I was going. The map was laid out for me. It was like the yellow brick road. And Dorothy is just going, all you got to do is stick on the yellow brick road and everything's fine. And you're going to face some stuff, but you've always got the yellow brick road. That's not the way it works. And you know why I think God has done it that way? Of course, part of it's because we live in a sin-cursed world. Things are broken. But I think part of the reason that God has done that is because that's how we grow. See, if you look back at your life, I think you will admit, we've said it before, that the times in your life where you've probably grown the most spiritually were the tougher times. And the times you've probably become a little more indulgent and a little more apathetic and flabby spiritually is when everything's going your way. And so it could be that the fog is one of the ways that God keeps our senses honed in because we're having to be more careful. I can tell you, I'm not a great defensive driver. I'm fairly aggressive, but my driving instructor is with me at all times and she's always there
to remind me
of the speed limit and the proximity of the cars and that kind of stuff. I mean, she's always there. It's a wrong time for those. But anyhow, I'm kind of an aggressive driver. But, you know, I get into this fog and things have to change. You know, you're driving in the fog. You've got to become incredibly defensive and you've got to watch. And that may be part of why God allows this in our lives. Because we're watching more closely. Our senses are keener, right? Yeah. So God's path, number one, is often unclear. I'm not trying to tell you that God never tells, but I'm telling you in my life, I'm sharing my story. Most of my life, God's path has not always been crystal clear. Now, again, I want to clarify. I'm not talking about God's word. I'm not talking about principles. I'm not talking about what God has to say about marriage and you know, illicit lifestyles and you know, the sexual perversion and transsexualism. The Bible is crystal clear on that stuff. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about knowing where to go. What's the next step? What direction do I need to travel in? It's often been unclear for me. But you know, I find in Scripture things that encourage me. For instance, here's Paul in the love chapter of all places, 1 Corinthians 13. Paul, this is the guy that's been called up to the third heaven. This is the guy who's going to write the majority of the New Testament. This is the guy that all of us kind of talk about and aspire to as far as a Christian. And listen to what he says. For we know in part, notice that phrase, in part, and we prophesy in part. For now we see, verse 12, in a mirror, dimly. Now, here's a way to interpret that. You can either see it as a mirror that's kind of messed up, and so everything's kind of out of focus. Maybe it's dirty. If you've ever been to one of those old fun houses where they have the wacky mirrors and everything's all, you know, like that. Or a window pane, and it's dirty. And so you can barely see through it, and what you do see is distorted. Okay, it's kind of like maybe the glass on your shower door in your bathroom. Kind of distorted, you know, right? Okay, so here's the deal. Paul says, look, that's how I see things. But then, face to face, he said, there's coming a day when everything will clear up. Now I know, here's that in part again, but then I shall know just as also I am known. Notice that here's the great apostle Paul, been to the third heaven, going to write the majority of the New Testament, and he says, I don't know it all. Sometimes for me, it's like looking through a dirty window pane. It's like looking into a blurry mirror. And let me give you an example. Here's Acts chapter 16, where Paul and his associates are convinced that they ought to travel and take the gospel east of Jerusalem to what we'd call the Orient. And over and over and over, God stops them until finally Paul gets it that God doesn't want him to do that. And so Paul pulls the brakes on, sets the parking brake, says, God, what are you wanting us to do? And then God opens the door with a Macedonian call for he and his associates to take the gospel west. Now, that may not seem to be a very big deal to you, but it's the difference in human history for the last 2,000 years that the west is Christianized and the east is steeped in paganism. Do you know that? And why did God make that choice? I don't know. But I am delighted that he did. I don't understand it all. Now, does that mean that people in the east of Jerusalem can't be saved? Well, of course not. There's Christians all through communist China and all that. It's not saying that. But see, here Paul wanted to do one thing, and God said, no, that's not the right direction. And finally, he was able to grab Paul by his collar. Listen to me. We're not going that direction. Okay, God, then where do we go? I'll tell you. He gives him this vision, the Macedonian vision, the call, takes the gospel west, and it changes world history. Now, here's the thing, guys. If God's plan is not perfectly clear to Paul, guess who it's probably not going to be perfectly clear to? Me, us, you. Secondly, God's path is hardly ever easy. It's hardly ever easy. Years ago at Trinity, I preached a message entitled, If It's Smooth Sailing, Check the Compass. Because I guarantee you're going the wrong way. Doesn't mean that God doesn't want us to have some easy times. Doesn't mean that God doesn't want to bless us. But typically speaking, if you're in the middle of God's will, you're right in the middle of a storm. Check out the ministry of Jesus of only 3 years and notice how many times his disciples were either in a physical storm or some kind of cultural, spiritual storm. It was constant. And most generally, Jesus led them right into it. He sends them out onto the lake. You remember the storm comes up, they think they're going to die, and then he shows up walking on the water. But who sent him out there? Well, the one that the Bible says could speak to the winds and the waves, they'd listen. You don't think he knew the storm was coming? He sent him right out into it anyway. So here's the deal. Following God, I find, is hardly ever easy. For instance, look at this verse. We normally just associate it with the gospel, but I believe it goes beyond that. Matthew 7:14, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. If you think being a Christian is easy street, you haven't read the scriptures. Notice he says, even though salvation is a supernatural work, it still isn't an easy way. Jesus in Luke 14, for instance, talks about if you're going to come after him, then you have to consider everyone else as not nearly as important. You must hate all these other things compared to your love for me. And you have to take up your cross and follow me. And remember, in his day, saying take up the cross was identical to saying take up your electric chair, take up your hangman's noose, take up your lethal injection, take up your firing squad. See, we think of crosses as decorations for churches and jewelry. Not in their day. So when he said, take up your cross, they went, what? Yeah, die. You have to be willing to die to yourself. And if you don't do that, you cannot be my disciple, he says. Well, is that easy stuff? No, that's hard stuff. That's why I say that God's path is hardly ever easy. And then to make it abundantly clear, in John 16:33, Jesus says, I've spoken to you that in me you may have peace. In the world, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble. So here's the thing. God could have taken us out of it. God could have changed the world, made it all easy. God could take you out of the trouble. But notice, he actually allows us to go through the trouble. Now, I'm not suggesting that he causes the trouble. I'm not suggesting that he relishes in his children struggling. But guys, I'm telling you, It is because of the struggle that verses like Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for the good. It's only because of the struggle that those verses bring comfort. Do you realize without the struggle, there would be no real comfort in Romans 8:28 because it's all working out perfect to begin with. We have to understand, if there are no lowlands, if there are no valleys, you won't ever be able to see mountains. There have to be these contours of life for us to be able, and none of us can live on the mountaintop. We can't take it. We're not designed for it, and the world won't allow it. There's going to be moments where we're going to be tested, and it's not just that God's doing it, but God is sovereign. He allows these things. Friends, God's path is hardly ever easy. Now, let me prove it to you. How have some of God's heroes handled stress and depression and times when the path wasn't clear or easy? Well, here's old Moses, Numbers 11:15. If I have found favor in your sight, please, God, kill me here and now. That's Moses. I mean, this guy says this not long after he's watched God open up the Red Sea and drown the Egyptians. He has seen the 10 miracles. We call them plagues. They're miracles. He has seen these 10 miracles by God through his own hand. He's watched all of this. He's seen the Passover. He has seen the death angel. He's watched all of this. And now here he is begging God to kill him. You telling me that Moses wasn't depressed and stressed? He most certainly was. What about the greater prophet Elijah? Faces down the prophets of Baal. Says, I'll tell you what, we'll have a contest. Whoever's God answers with fire, that'll be God. Well, can you imagine what kind of spot he's putting God on? But he's really putting himself on the spot. What's he going to look like if God says, I ain't going to answer that prayer? Well, then he looks like a doofus too. It's not just the prophets of Baal. And we know what happens. God answers with fire and the whole thing is a miracle. Not long after that, listen to what Elijah says. 1 Kings 19:4. It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's. Kill me, God. I have felt like praying that prayer before. I've just never been bold enough to do it because I was afraid God would take me up on it. It'd be one of the only prayers he answered immediately and directly. But I've prayed it for Paul a lot of times. This is Elijah. How about Jonah? Takes a submarine ride. God gets him all straightened out. And then he goes to Nineveh and experiences the greatest revival of any evangelist that's ever preached. He not only gets the entire capital city of Assyria and the king to get right with God, the whole country gets right with God. My goodness, you're talking about a church revival. That is one. And not long after that, here's Jonah's prayer in Jonah 4:3. Now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. What in the Sam Hill is going on with these guys? And these guys are heroes. But these aren't the only ones. How about this great warrior, David? I know he's had his foul ups. He's like all the rest of us. But man, he was a mighty warrior for God and saw some amazing things. God did incredible things through him. Listen to him in Psalm 42:5. In fact, we'll come back to that when we do the second half of this message. And we'll see how God helps us to deal with depression and stress. David says, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you disquieted within me? Well, notice he's cast down. David's scraping the bottom of the barrel here. And as we read the passage later on, obviously you can go read Psalm 42. You can see David is struggling with what we would call depression. These are the heroes. John the Baptist. Jesus said there's not a greater man born of woman than John the Baptist. John's in the dungeon, not just physically, but he's in the dungeon spiritually. And he calls one of the associates aside and said, hey, listen, take this note to Jesus. Because I'm really wondering if we made a mistake. And you remember what the associate said to Jesus? John wants to know, are you the guy or do we look for another? This is the greatest man born of woman. And he's so full of doubt, he thinks he's missed it on the Messiah. His first cousin. Come on. Guys, if these fellas could have these kinds of doubts, what about us? And then, of course, don't forget the great apostle Paul. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8, Paul says, we were in such trouble and under such distress, we despaired of life. He's saying it was a burden just to realize in the morning that you woke up, you're still alive. We're hoping God would have killed us in our sleep. That's literally what he's saying here. Now, this is the great apostle Paul. And yet he says, I'm despairing of life. We're far enough removed from this guy that most of us might know who he is, but that's about it. But that's Charles Spurgeon. But in the 19th century, he was considered the greatest preacher alive. So much so that since then, he has borne the title the Prince of Preachers. Now, I know we're far enough removed from Spurgeon. Most of us don't know anything about Spurgeon much. I mean, we know he's a great Christian, know he's a preacher. But did you know that Charles Spurgeon, who was considered the greatest preacher alive, and some still consider him that, the greatest preacher that's come along since he was born, do you know that he was plagued with very frequent fits of depression? Depression. Where he would just get down in the bottom and just not want to go on. This great prince of preachers. You see, behind that look, there's a lot of things you might not know that are going on. Dr. Bennett, my mentor, we were in an old, it was not old, it was a beautiful, in fact, Paul's dad designed it. It was the First Baptist Church of Fort Smith, one of the old Corinthian style auditoriums, had these big old wooden pews. And I remember Dr. Bennett would remind me, he said, Dan, don't ever forget one day when you're pastoring a church, every Sunday when you stand up there, there's a broken heart on every pew. And I've discovered there's more than one broken heart. If you could just see behind the mask that we all wear, I don't mean we're all fakes. I don't mean it like that. But we all try to put our best foot forward. We don't want to walk around just constantly telling everybody all of our stuff. So we don't do that. Plus, we don't want people to think less of us. It's not that we're living dual lifestyles and we're hypocrites and fakes. It's just that we don't want to tell people some of the thoughts that we have and some of the frustrations and the battles that we're fighting. Behind those eyes was a man who was tortured with frequent fits of depression. I don't know whether this guy ever became a Christian or not, but he's considered one of the greatest political leaders to ever live. Winston Churchill was known for his V for victory and all of that, and led Great Britain through that whole struggle when it looked like they were goners. In fact, he gave that famous speech where he said, even if we're goners, we're going to fight those Nazis in the streets, and we're going to fight them here, and we're going to fight them there, and even if we go down, we're going to go down fighting them. And he won. He was constantly battling depression to the point that sometimes he was so depressed he would just retreat from everybody and just kind of roll up in his depression like a fog. In fact, he commonly called it the black dog that was at his heels, always biting and barking at him. Some of the greatest people who have ever lived have battled with these moments. Now, I'm not going to take the time to read through this passage, but Hebrews 11 kind of rehearses some of the great Christians who've lived through the centuries. You're probably familiar with this enough to know that it talks about them escaping the mouths of lions, escaping the edge of the sword, but then others were sacrificed. Some were beaten. Some were killed, martyred. They walked around without decent clothing and food and shelter, and yet the world wasn't worthy of these people. They were such godly people. But look at what happened to them. The path is hardly ever easy. And let me illustrate it to you from probably a low, really low moment in Paul's life. Now, I don't want to accuse the Apostle Paul of battling with depression, but I'm telling you, when you listen to this, it drips with it. Listen to what he says to Timothy. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. Demas was a traveling companion, has departed to Thessalonica. Only Luke is with me. I'm here by myself, just me and Luke. Get Mark and bring him with you. He's useful. I need some help here. Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. May the Lord repay him according to his works. You also must beware of him, for he has greatly resisted our words. Think about that. Think about the wound that this man named Alexander had inflicted on Paul. You can just hear it in his voice. He did me great harm. God will judge him. At my first defense, no one stood with me. I was alone. all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. Also, I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. Think of it. This is this great apostle. And you can just hear the pain in his words as he writes this. So, God's path is not always clear. It's hardly ever easy. Last thing I want to say to you, it's forever worth it. It's forever worth the cost. Doesn't matter the cost. Listen to what Paul says, writing from a prison cell. I figure you got some reason for depression. You're jailed. You're now jailbird for the gospel. He says, I want you to know, brothers, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. They've hurt me greatly, but it's promoted the gospel. I can tell you, Paul was a wounded man. I think one day when you meet Paul, I don't want to say that you're going to be disappointed, but I think you're going to be surprised. These guys are not the caricatures that we've created. They were regular people just like us, battling with the same stuff that we battle with, and I think you'd be surprised. Listen to what Paul goes on to say in that same letter. We call it chapter 3. But what things were gained to me, these I've counted lost for Christ. Yet indeed I also count all things lost for the excellence of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things. Notice he says all things. He'd laid it all on the altar, everything. And count them as rubbish, as garbage, that I may gain Christ. So you see, Paul's faith would get a hold of him in those moments of depression. He'd say, whew, I'm all by myself. Nobody stood with me. Alexander has just inflicted tremendous damage. God, what are you doing? And then his faith and God's truth would get a hold of him. And he'd say, it's all worth it. It's all worth it. Listen to him writing to these Corinthians. Just a few pages after, he said, I despaired for life. I wanted to die. God, why didn't you kill me? I'm asleep. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory. See where his faith and God's truth got a hold of him in the midst of his depression? Romans 8:18, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Listen to old Peter, crucified upside down, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. Exceeding joy. Who's going to have exceeding joy? Those people that have walked into the fog for God and just kept walking. Wasn't clear, it wasn't easy, but it was worth it. They just kept on walking. They just kept on going, which is one of the solutions to the problem with stress and depression. Now I want to close. I have one last quote, but I want to read to you some things that I just jotted down. They're just a few. I could write a book on them, probably should sometime. But as a young pastor in Poto, Oklahoma, I was 23. When I first became the pastor of the church, I had just turned 24, but I'd been the interim pastor that summer when I was still 23. And even when I became the pastor, I was too young to drive the church van because the insurance wouldn't cover me. You had to be 25. I'm just a kid. Church ran about 150, maybe. Well, we went to all kinds of stuff. I won't bore you with all that. But finally, the church started growing. We'd gotten up around 250 or so, and we needed to relocate. But there was a contingency within our church that just said, you know, this ground is holy. The nails that my Uncle Joe drove in the roof are holy. And I said, well, we'll pull them out and give them to you. But, you know, anyway, everything's holy. And we needed to relocate. And there was a guy in our church. He happened to be a deacon. I don't know how in the world he ever became a deacon. But he was a huge man physically. But he was against all this. And so he became the spokesman for all the naysayers. We had to have a business meeting for the church to decide to actually relocate. He sat right there in the front, Doc, right about where you are. And when it came time for people to speak, I presented the plan and all. Joe stood up, and he was just a mountain of a man. And he began to give all the reasons why this was a mistake. You're leading us off the cliff. You have missed God on all that stuff. And I'm just a young preacher. I'm standing up there. My knees are trying to knock together. And so I had my legs far enough apart where they wouldn't so nobody could hear me. I'm scared to death. I believe what we're doing is right. But I've never faced. And this guy, I mean, I knew him. I loved him. But he was trying to talk me down. And I'd be honest with you, I had said everything I knew to say. I didn't know what to do. And there was a man in the back who happened to be personal friends with Joe. He stood up and he said, "Look, Joe, you've had weeks to think about this and pray about this. God's in it. And it's time to move forward." And I could have run back there and hugged old Melvin's neck, kissed him on the cheek. And Joe flinched like that, and the people started to clap. And he turned and walked out, and he never came back to our church ever. But we built a building. We got 10 acres just north of town. It was old pasture land. Everybody would say, "Yeah, stupid preacher. He's paying $7,500 an acre for pasture land." I said, "No, this is frontage property on this highway that goes from Poto to Fort Smith. The town's coming here." And today it has. That church is surrounded, but is in prime location. God provided a man named Melvin. In the midst of my personal fog, there's a man named Melvin. 92, went to UConn to a church called Trinity. Church was running about 325, 350. Faced all kinds of difficulties, but finally the church started to grow. We got up around 650. Every now and then we'd have a real high day of 700, but couldn't handle anymore. We needed to relocate. It was obvious. How are you going to do that? Our church is broke. That church was. We didn't have any money. How are you going to do this, preacher? So I got in front of the people and I said, "Look, we'd already decided to relocate." And I said, "Before we go out and spend a ton of money that we don't even have, let's just ask God. Maybe he'd want to give us some land." In 2 weeks, we were given 20 acres in the most prime spot at that time in Yukon, Oklahoma. The old farmer that owned the land was an old dried up Catholic, probably didn't even know the Lord. But his elderly sister went to our church. And the guys had been buying that land from him for years. He wouldn't sell it to them. He called him up. And I didn't visit with him. I didn't know them. I didn't even know the man. Didn't even know this was happening. He called those guys up and he said, "Look, I'll sell you this land under one condition." They said, "Well, what is that? We'll do anything." He said, "You give that Baptist church 20 acres. Now, you understand, this is a dyed-in-the-wool, hardened Catholic man who can't stand Baptists that God has put in his hand. And said, that church and that preacher needs land, and you're going to give it to him." And we were given 20 acres from a man that I didn't even know. How'd that happen? Well, you see, as a silly preacher walking in the fog who wasn't real sure where to go, but he had an inkling, had an idea. Well, then things happened at Trinity, kind of a horror story. Most of you know that story by now. And I ended up kind of ousted out of there for no scandal, nothing I'd done. They just decided they didn't like being like Fairview. And they basically booted me out. But it split the church in about three directions and lots of people going different ways. We had about 150, 200 people that said, "We're not going back there. What do we do?" Pam and I started a Bible study with them, just trying to kind of help them transition. Turned into a church that I didn't want to start. We started a church. We had nowhere to meet. But guess what? It was a guy named Billy there that was a part of that little church. And he said, "You know what? We've got possession. It's not ours, but we were the ones left holding it. An old church over there on not Lake Hefner, but Lake Overholzer. It's beautiful property. The old buildings are not in all that great a shape. But you know what? You guys just have that." Our little church had nowhere to go and no money. We went over there and we cleaned up those old buildings and we started having church. An old church called Lakewood Baptist Church. In fact, we became Lakewood. Now, eventually we became Liberty Church in Yukon through a whole other set of things. But there was a man named Billy who knew that this preacher in the fog needed some help. I've told you this story. I'll make it short. I'm in Durant, Oklahoma with Paul Blair. We're speaking at an event. Doesn't turn out the way I certainly thought it ought to go. And it was at the end of a long string of events that hadn't turned out the way I thought they ought to go. And I called my wife on my way home and said, "Get ready. We're burning this uniform. We're going to do a dance around it. I'm done with this Black Robe Regiment deal. It's going up in smoke. I'm done." And I was. Little did I know that there was a couple there at that event that didn't even know why they were there that were billionaires. I'd never met them. And they said, Dan, later on, they told me, it wasn't until you got up to speak that we knew that's why we were there. They called me and they said, we want you and Paul to come back down to Cisco, if you would, and we want you to be a part of another deal. I didn't know it was a tryout. It was a tryout. After that deal, you know what they did? They called me and they said, hey, we want to give you a grant. I said, well, okay. I figured, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. They said, oh, no, we want to fund your ministry. When you see me pull up here in that van and that trailer, they bought it. That's the reason we were able to spend $250,000 on a documentary. They paid for it. Just out of heaven. There's a guy in the fog that was going to go light up his backyard with a uniform. But God had a plan. And you're just walking in the fog. And I must admit to you, it gets old. It gets old. But what can you do? But just move forward. One last, and then we'll hear this quote and we'll be done. Paul came to me in August, 3.5 years ago, whatever that date was, whatever that year was. They all kind of run together like days now. But anyway, and he said, Dan, I want to bounce this off of you, this idea of the merger. And man, it just immediately kind of rang true to me. I went home and told Pam, and she put her whiskey bottle down and said, tell me again. No! I don't know why I did that. It was Paul's whiskey bottle. So anyway, it rang true to her. I visited with other leaders. They said, I just think this is God. This is God. We prayed through it. You as a church worked through it. My church kind of fought through it. And half of them said, we're going. Some of them are sitting right here today across the auditorium. There you go. There's a right place for those. That was a right place. So anyway, how did we know that Paul had throat cancer? I didn't know that. I don't think he knew that. We worked through that through the fall. And then my first Sunday here officially, he had found out that Friday. He had throat cancer. Doctor said 10, 15 years ago, it had been a death sentence for you. But we think we can fix it. But you're going to go through it. Now, how could we have timed that? How could we have even known that? Two preachers walking in the fog, but trusting God to give them what they need. And he did. Yeah, he did. So I've run over 4 minutes. Let me close. I've lost some respect for this guy, and I've told you that before. But that doesn't nullify his Christianity. It doesn't nullify the right things that he has said and preached and written over the years. He's a prolific writer and has written some amazing things. I want to give you this quote. I've used it before. But I just felt it was so appropriate to end this message. Max Lucado said, God never said that the journey would be easy. But he did say that the arrival would be worthwhile. He may not do what you want, but he will do what is right and best. He's the father of forward motion. Trust him. He will get you home. And the trials of the trip will be lost in the joys of the feast. How do you follow God in the fog? Carefully taking one step after the next. You just keep moving. You just keep moving.